Blog Talk Radio.
Today we have Kim Russell, the chairperson for People United for Medical Marijuana. It's a political committee registered in Florida. Kim is a third-generation Floridian, and she's college-educated and had a successful career in the real estate industry before becoming a stay-at-home mom 4 years ago. She's got two children under four, and she started this political committee in February 2009 with the goal of legalizing medical marijuana. Kim has invited Mr. Rosenfeld. So why don't you give your own introduction, since I didn't receive an intro for you?
Okay. My name's Irvin Rosenfeld, and I am the longest surviving of the four federal medical cannabis patients in the United States. The United States federal government has been growing marijuana for me medically and been supplying me for almost 28 years. I'm a stockbroker in Fort Lauderdale. I also am an author. I have a book called it's out called My Medicine. And I also teach on the weekends. I help out volunteering and teaching disabled children and adults how to sail sailboats with an organization called Shake a Lake out of Coconut Grove in Miami. Thank you for letting me be here.
Well, my first question is to Kim. I want you to tell us exactly what it is you were all doing at Puffin, which is the People United for Medical Marijuana. And the website, by the way, is www.pusmm.org. Kim?
Thank you so much for having me. What we're trying to do down here in Florida is we are trying to re-legalize medical marijuana. We are doing that by educating the public and lobbying our legislators. We have started the ballot initiative process down here. We need to collect 676,811 valid signatures
it begs the question, how many do we have now already, and how many more do you need?
Oh, as of today, we have 14,224, so we're still a long way from that goal, but we're making progress every day. We're also creating a network of doctors, patients, lawyers, and entrepreneurs that can see when we do change the laws, we'll have everything in place to go ahead and provide patients with medicine.
And I have to ask you, Kim, what made you decide to take on this challenge?
Oh, goodness. I knew that somebody had to do something. There were too many people that are hurting in this state. I could benefit from the use of medical marijuana. I have many of my family members that could benefit from medical marijuana. The diseases that run in my family, I have cancer on both sides. We have Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, glaucoma. So a variety of diseases that all can be treated successfully with medical marijuana. We estimate over 2 million people in the state of Florida could be a medical marijuana patient. And I don't want my children growing up in a world where we just make people suffer under the slight possibility that someone might abuse the system. Somebody had to do something.
And Kim, who are the people that are helping you? Who are they, if any?
Oh, right now we have an incredible group of volunteers that are helping us out. All of the people that are helping us are either patients or have loved ones that are patients. We have doctors, nurses, firefighters, police officers, and lawyers that are all supporting our efforts. This is a total nonpartisan issue. All the party lines are crossed. We have people of all ages, races, and religions that are getting involved. It's really inspiring to see such a diverse group of people come together for a common purpose.
And my next question, I'm going to direct it at Irving. Irving, let's start at the basics. What exactly is marijuana?
Marijuana is a natural herb that has been growing in this world for centuries upon centuries upon centuries. Many generations have learned about the medical aspect of the herb and have utilized it. And so we're just trying to reuse what's already been out there. Even in our country, in the United States, medical marijuana was legal in this country from 1860 to 1937, mostly made in tincture form, manufactured by Merck, Eli Lilly, all the well-known pharmaceutical companies, and it worked quite well. And when it was taken off the market in 1937, it wasn't because of its medical aspects. It was because of the political aspect.
Why don't you tell us what political aspects you're referring to?
Well, back in the 20s and the 30s, the people that were in power, and I'm going to use the term white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, for lack of a better term, but the people in charge, they were worried about staying in charge because the Mexican and the blacks were proliferating much greater than they were. And they realized that at some point they could be outvoted. So what they needed to do was somehow take the vote away from these people. And they figured, well, the only thing that these people do that we don't is they use marijuana. So if we outlaw marijuana and make it a crime, then we can arrest them and take away their voting rights. And that was one reason why it came about. Plus, these people that were in charge, such as DuPont, they had just come out with the petrochemicals against rayon and nylon, which was they wanted to use instead of the hemp product, which was a natural plant, cannabis or marijuana that is non-psychoactive, but that can be made into a cloth. And also, the lumber industry was against it. You had the paper industry, you had the cotton industry. So therefore, it was a lot of organizations and lobby organizations that were fighting to try to outlaw marijuana for their own personal good. And that's what happened.
That's why it became illegal.
That's why it became illegal in 1937. And then in 1941, it was dropped out of the American Pharmacopeia as a medicine.
And between the two of you, maybe you want to take turns. What are the medicinal uses of marijuana?
Oh, wow. Well, I have to give that one to Irvin.
Actually, Kimba, you can go ahead and answer, and I'll finish it.
Okay, great. Well, marijuana has been used medicinally for over 5,000 years. When it was made illegal in 1937, it was as common as aspirin was. George Washington used it for headaches and Queen Victoria for menstrual cramps. Right now, it can treat over 100 different diseases. The most commonly known ones are chronic pain, glaucoma, cancer, multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's, heart disease, and diabetes. The list just goes on and on, but Irv, you can finish up with that one.
Well, what I like to say is, of course, many, many, many disorders, from Crohn's disorders to different mental disorders, but what I like to say is this. I've used it for muscle relaxant, anti-inflammatory, for pain, and where nothing should have kept my tumors from not growing, they've not grown for over 36 years. I think it's because of the medical marijuana. So in my use as a federal patient, it's worked for me where I take no other medications. I haven't taken opiates for pain in over 20 years. And I'm ambulatory. I get around pretty well. And so I'm able to do this because I have the right medicine. And it's sad when other people are suffering needlessly. That's what Kim's trying to do. That's what I've been trying to do all these years, is to try to get medicine in the hands of physicians so they can get it into the hands of patients. And that's what we're trying to educate, and that's why we're doing this show.
And I wanted to ask you, are there not substitutes such as Marinol? Why don't you tell us about Marinol?
Well, I've used Marinol. Okay, Marinol is synthetic THC. THC is the psychoactive ingredient of marijuana. It's one of 64 known cannabinoids, and it's the one psychoactive ingredient. They've synthesized it, and they feel like that pill will suffice somebody using the smoked marijuana, when in fact, THC, the psychoactive ingredient, probably is not what benefits muscle relaxant, anti-inflammatory for pain. We think it's cannabidiol, which is CBD. So I've tried it. When I had to go to Canada for a stockholders meeting, and the Canadian government would not let me bring in my medical marijuana, the reason they gave was because we don't allow the Canadian citizens in with their medicine. Why should they let me in with mine? So like I said to the Minister of Health for Canada, I said, you mean I'm a pawn in the war between the two countries? And they said, yeah. So my doctor gave me Marinol the week before so I could use it and see what effects it would have, and it did nothing at all. Now, to some people it does work, and I'm glad that they do get a benefit from the THC pill. However, for most people, it doesn't give them any relief, and actually because it comes on so strong, the psychoactive ingredient, and when it really affects somebody, a lot of people get very nervous and very agitated by it. So it's a very, very marginal drug at best.
And my next question. You decide between the two of you who wants to answer this. We hear marijuana is dangerous, that it's addictive, and that it's a gateway drug. Would you say yes or no, or possibly, Irvin, you want to take that on?
Yeah, let me answer that. First of all, the Institute of Medicine had a year study in 98 and 99, and their conclusion, which I testified, and all the major players all over the country, pro and con, testified. And one of the findings was that it is not addictive and it is not a gateway drug. Okay. So that was decided by the Institute of Medicine in 1999. So I hope your listeners will realize that this was a government study and this was the conclusion that came. Now, is it dangerous? Yes, it can be dangerous. Okay, it can be definitely dangerous for people, just like any medicine can be. You know, it's not a substance that everybody should just automatically think they should use. I think they should have a reason medically to be able to use it, and if they use it, they need to be in an environment where they can find out whether it's going to be a positive or a negative. Because, yeah, it can be, especially anybody in their formative years. I mean, no one in their formative years should use any type of drug like this, except, of course, under a doctor's care if it need to be. So, you know, I don't suggest people use it just to be using it, okay? I suggest that if people need it, it should be made available.
Yep. And the one thing that I do want to make very clear is there has never been an overdose of marijuana. It is impossible to overdose on marijuana. So the people that think it's a dangerous drug, it may be dangerous, but it's not deadly like many of the other drugs that are being forced upon us.
And I've been smoking marijuana now since I was 18 and a half, and I'm 57 and a half. Now, in the almost 28 years the federal government's been giving me my medicine, I've received over 120,000 medical marijuana cigarettes. Now, you would think if marijuana was going to be harmful, that I sure would be the one to be shown that it was harmful. And the federal government, of course, doesn't want to study it. They don't want to know that it works. We did a privately funded study in 2001 for the federal patients. And we went to Montana and had a complete neurological evaluation. We had brainwave testing, IQ testing, respiratory, memory, you name the testing, they did it. And all four of us came up perfectly normal. So I think right there we debunked the idea that it can be potentially dangerous for you as far as your health.
And Irving, if you don't mind, and if it's not too personal, and correct me if it's inappropriate, could you give us an idea of what your medical condition is?
Yes, sure, I'd be glad to. And it's very public, of course, which is in my book, My Medicine, which can be gotten at mymedicinethebook.com. Anyway, I have a disorder. I have two disorders. The first one is called multiple congenital cartilaginous exostosis, and the second disorder is a variant of the syndrome pseudo-pseudo-hypoparathyroidism. Now, the first disorder states that whatever tumors you have at puberty, they will grow as you grow. These are bone tumors, actual extra bone, like an extra finger or whatever, but they're actually pure bone. Mostly growing outwardly, but they can grow inwardly into the center of the body. But these tumors will grow as I grow. When they become a problem or they grow too quickly where they could go malignant, I had to have surgery. I made all the decisions from age 10 what surgeries to have and when to have them. Okay, so luckily I survived. At 18, my epiphysis, which is the growth centers, were all closed. So I had survived. At 19, I started developing brand new tumors again. And existing ones started growing again, which should not have happened. That's when 2 years later, an endocrinologist in Norfolk, Virginia, my home area, discovered the second disorder, which says that if a person has the first disorder, tumors can grow at any age, and new ones can develop at any time. So when he told me that at age 21, or almost 22, he said, you know, that's a time bomb. That's like a death sentence. And I said, well, I was told that when I was 10 years old and went with the first disorder. And so I feel very fortunate that I think I found the medicine that has, you know, basically stopped total growth of everything as far as any of the tumors and has given me my life that I lead today.
Well, my next question, your response to this question now kind of answers my next question. As I was going to ask you, isn't smoking marijuana bad for your health?
Not in the least bit, no. My lungs are perfectly normal. In 2001, my lung capacity was 108% of normal. And while people find it hard to believe smoking, actually cannabis, or marijuana, is also used in asthma, treatment of asthma. And while people find that hard to believe that smoking something could help asthma, it does. It keeps the lungs clear. And in fact, a Dr. Donald Tashkin, who was the main government doctor for the last 40 years, doing research to show how bad marijuana is on the human body, his last study before he retired was a 10-year study to prove that marijuana caused lung cancer. At the end of his 10 years, he reported that he could not find one case of lung cancer due to marijuana. And in fact, he could not explain, but he said the people that smoked marijuana and cigarettes had less cancers than people that just smoked cigarettes. So I believe that cannabis, the marijuana, is a neuroprotective. I really do. I think it's for me, I call it a fountain of youth. Okay, I'm 57 and a half years old. I don't anywhere near look like that. Okay, and everything that I can do, it's because I have the right medicine. That simple.
One of my best friends suffers from asthma. What steps do we have to take to get a doctor to approve medical marijuana? Because we're in the state of Florida. We're not in California. What does a Floridian do to get a prescription for medical marijuana in California? Are there any patients besides yourself? Because you're famous. You're running the cause. You're like our poster boy for this program. But what about a regular, typical individual who doesn't have, and remember, you're very knowledgeable, extremely well-spoken, very well-presented. And in addition to that, it seems like all your relatives are in medicine.
I have a lot of them in medicine,
Serious professions. These are not periphery positions, rather. They're doctors. And can a regular person who doesn't have your background, who doesn't have your wealth, fellow, regular gal, what are they to do so that their doctor will prescribe medical marijuana?
Well, first of all,
what do you do?
Okay, and first of all, in all the states that have passed it, a doctor cannot prescribe marijuana because marijuana is an illegal substance. They can recommend it.
Okay.
So based on the recommendation from a physician, the only physicians that can write a prescription are the ones with government Schedule I license, meaning my doctor, LV's doctor, and George's and Barber's doctor. They're the only three doctors in the country that can actually write a prescription. There are three doctors in the United States that have the legal right to write a prescription for marijuana. Correct. That is it. But there's only four patients. So our program was shut down. Our federal program was shut down by George Bush Sr. in 1992. There were 13 of us grandfathered in. Another 28 patients had been approved by all three government agencies, DEA, FDA, and NIDA, National Institute of Drug Abuse, and they never received any of the medicine. And when Bush Sr. arbitrarily shut the program down, they never got it, and so they were not grandfathered in. The 13 of us that were, we've been receiving it. There are four of us left. But what I can tell a patient in Florida or any, I'm not sure about every state, but let me speak especially of Florida. What I say is this. Number one, you need to convince yourself that marijuana works for you medically. Once you're convinced of that, the next step is to convince a physician. Now, how you convince a physician is this. Get them, they're a doctor, okay? Doctors aren't taught about marijuana in medical school. But thank goodness, because of an organization that I'm a director of called Patients Out of Time, you can go to medicalcannabis.com. Every 2 years, we have a medical conference that is sanctioned by the AMA and the American College of Physicians to allow CE credits for doctors and for nurses. We bring in the top scientists, doctors, patients, nurses from around the world, and they present their findings on what they've been working on for medical marijuana issues, different cannabinoids, different research. And this is a program put on every 2 years. A doctor can go there, they can pay a fee, a very inexpensive fee, download the conference, and learn about marijuana. Also, through our website, medicalcannabis.com, we can put them in touch with doctors who are knowledgeable. So they just don't have to listen to a patient, but they can talk to actual doctors from around the world if they want to really to learn. So you convince your doctor, and then what the patient needs to do is ask this doctor for this, a letter saying that if he could legally recommend marijuana for this person's asthma, let's just say, okay, he would. He would carry that letter. You would let the doctor know that letter will never go public. His name will never be public, okay? But that letter you stick in your pocket. What that letter's for is if, God forbid, you ever to get arrested. So that's the first letter. The second letter I suggest is if you're religious, to go to your clergy, rabbi, priest, minister, whatever, and let them know the disorder you've got and that thank God you found marijuana and that it works for you. And then show them the letter, or if you haven't gotten a letter from the doctor, and get the minister first, whatever, but then show them the other letter and say to the minister or the priest, would you please give me a letter? Again, it'll never go public. But would you give me a letter saying that you're familiar with my use of marijuana for my disorder and thank God it's helping? And sign his name and again with a phone number. Again, for that police officer, God forbid you get arrested. Then the third letter you go to is to an attorney. You get a letter from an attorney saying this letter will state that, Mr. Officer, this person is a patient. But if you decide you want to make this person a criminal, then call me first. But if you still decide, that patient will go with you. He will not resist arrest. You don't need handcuffs. You can do whatever. But understand that I will be defending this person on medical necessity defense. And in the state of Florida, that has been done and successfully twice. So now this police officer is looking at these three letters that they can make phone calls. He can call the attorney, he can call the priest, and he can call the doctor. And that doctor's going to say, well, yeah, if I could legally recommend marijuana for this person, I would. Yeah, I'm going to stand up in the court and say that. And what's the judge or a jury going to say? So if you have those letters, and again, you're very polite, yes, sir, no, sir, officer, you have the right to consider me a criminal. If you want to do that, I will go with you. But I'm a patient. I'm not a criminal. That officer is going to think twice. It will keep, I think, most police officers, they're going to take a step back and go, wait a minute, do I want to do this? You know, do I really want to do this?
So they want to take all that on. Yeah.
Exactly. And then once you get the newspapers involved and the media involved, especially depending on how that person is, I mean, if that person is 70 years old, think about it. You're going to be bringing a 70-year-old into court. And then if it's in Florida, you can have somebody like me that can come testify that I'm going to hold my tin can of 300 marijuana cigarettes and say, you know, this is what the federal government gives me every 25 days as a medicine for my disorder. And you want to prosecute this person for whatever amount they had for their disorder? When the federal government, your tax money, is paying to grow and to ship me my medicine? Yeah, what's the chances that person's going to get convicted?
Slim to none, I hope.
I mean, I try to be, as inconspicuous about it when I take my medicine.
My next question. Kim, do you have to smoke it? Is that the only form?
No, absolutely not. As a matter of fact,
what other forms are there?
Ingestion is the preferred method. Capsules, you can put it in a capsule. Of course, everybody's heard of the pot brownie. Make it into teas, tinctures, edibles, lotions.
Vaporization.
Interesting. The nebulizer for people who have asthma, can you put it in there?
I'm not sure. Not had anybody tell me they could or couldn't.
No, it just occurred to me. My friend suffers tremendously from asthma, and I would love to find a way to give her, you know, peace and stability and not have to be frightened by it.
How does the nebulizer work? I'm not even sure.
It's a small steam machine, and if she has an asthma attack, she can turn it on, and I think she puts a buterol in it, and she can sniff it to calm her, to open up the lungs.
Mm-hmm.
Am I calling it the wrong thing? Maybe I'm calling it the wrong thing. It's like a little steam machine. Why don't you tell us what form that is, a tincture?
Well, what a tincture would be is they would be taking the leaf and the bud, and mm-hmm. they would be actually diluting it with, say, grain alcohol, and then straining it through cheesecloth, and then the liquid that comes out of there is a tincture of the plant.
And I would imagine that could be put in a nebulizer to be inhaled, I would think.
Yes, I would think so, too. I'm just asking because anyone, my father suffered from asthma, my sister suffered from tremendous asthma, and, allergy runs huge in my family, and I get it every now and again in the form of hives, whereas they get it with asthma, which is far more serious, and they can't breathe.
Yeah, it's. We've got a woman in our office whose father died of asthma, her brother died of asthma, and I'm the medical coordinator if anything goes wrong in the office, so there's not a lot you can do for them, is what I've been told for my CPR course.
How is this going to be regulated? How is cannabis going to be regulated? And now, I guess, since it's medical marijuana, we don't call it pot and we don't call it weed. We call it cannabis, correct?
Cannabis is the scientific term for it.
But that's what we should call it since it's a medical matter, I would
think. Absolutely. The way that I think that it should be regulated is with a mandatory card registration system. Everybody mm-hmm. who wants to register as a, intends on using it as a medicine needs to register as a patient. If we can have secure growing facilities around the state, all of the operations should be kept in the state of Florida. We want to limit the dispensaries and have a regulating board that oversees to make sure that people are, you know, up and up. And all of this will be paid for by taxes and licensing fees paid by the patient. And the patients would be more than happy to pay for taxing and licensing fees to have the right to use this medicine.
And I have to say, I'm looking at the comparisons county per county. And the longest growing county that's actually legally growing medical marijuana and taxing it and increasing the county coffers is Mendocino County in California. And it is right now the richest county in the United States. Now, Florida has great growing weather. And by the way, I'm not a pot smoker. I don't consume it in any way, shape, or form. But I'm noticing that the Florida area, we certainly could use some revenue. And since we have the weather, it seems to me if you can grow corn, you can grow weed. And tax it? And is it true, I heard somewhere, that it's the third largest cash crop in Florida. Is that true?
That is true. Yes, that is
Isn't
very true.
Isn't that remarkable?
It
the
is.
The third largest cash crop, and we're not exploiting it.
When you look at the economics of the situation,
yeah.
It comes twofold, first of all. If you change the laws, then you're not going to have to arrest innocent patients. And without having to arrest innocent patients, we're not going to be spending the money in our court systems or our prisons or our jails. So therefore, you're going to have an economic savings just in that alone of probably, you know, with the state, probably millions upon millions of dollars on that. Then while we do not pay taxes on medicine in this country, and in some respects it sets a bad example taxing a medical cannabis, we would agree that the reason that we might one day win is because of the economic value. So what I envision is basically what California's doing. They're trying to do a tax and regulate law now after they've had medical marijuana on the books now for 14 years and seen the benefits without the harm. Now they're trying to do a tax and regulate. If they do a tax and regulate, and if it passes in the state, then at some point the counties can then start saying, well, wait a minute, the people that get cards for medical use, we're not going to tax them anymore. So I'm hoping at some point that the patient wouldn't have to pay it. But there again, the prohibitive cost of illegalization of marijuana, so if you're able to regulate it for medical use, then the cost will come down considerably. So therefore, to pay a tax on top, you know, pay a tax on a much smaller amount, patients would be very happy to do.
Absolutely. And it is a multi-billion dollar a year industry. It could potentially bring 10,000 new jobs to the state of Florida. We are having our worst unemployment rate in 50 years. And we're looking at about $200 million in sales tax revenues that can be used directly by firefighters that are being cut and our teachers that are being cut and police officers.
We could definitely use the revenue. There's no question. We have two malls here where I live, and they're mostly empty. If that is the third largest cash crop, and now, you know, it's being grown and it's being sold. I don't care whether it's legal or not. I see, you know, I know that it's for sale in Florida. But who's getting the revenue? Where's that going? Isn't that still going to the mob? I mean, excuse me, organized
yes.
crime?
Exactly.
No.
You're exactly right.
I'm sorry, I don't. Okay, these mm-hmm. people, a lot of unemployment, they're using it to pay their house bill. They're using it to pay the electric bill. I mean, I think it's most of the grow houses, and supposedly we have more grow houses in the state of Florida than any other country, any other state. Now, I think these are hard-working people that want a job.
Wait a minute, not California?
No, we have more, because in California they can do it openly. Okay, so they really don't have grow houses per se, but a lot of places, because they can do it openly. We have to hide it. So that's the difference. But I think it's just hard-working, mostly people that are trying to just get by and take themselves, and also enough to be able to sell to their friends. I think most of it is being sold to people they know. It's not going to the street, per se. I don't think there's
mm-hmm.
a lot that much street involvement of marijuana. There might be of other drugs. But of marijuana, it's really not, you know, you don't go down a street corner anymore to buy a dime bag.
You know, we do have the strictest laws in the country here in Florida, so it's a huge black market thing. I do believe that there are some people, as Irvin has said, that are doing it just to get by. but you hear all the time these grow houses that are being set up by some drug cartel, and then they disappear, and the Mexicans that are left holding the bag, so to say, when the DEA comes in and raids them. I do believe that the black market is being greatly fueled by the Florida economy.
And if we were able to pass the laws, then it wouldn't happen. You know, that's why we want to do it.
Irvin, what is a grow house? You know, the people like myself, that we're not in the circle, you know, we don't know exactly what a lot of these expressions are. What is a grow house?
Well, a basic grow house would be a house that really is just set up for growing marijuana.
By the outside, really, it looks like a residential house.
Yeah, that they set up just to grow marijuana. Some of them do live in the house, I mean, because they have to wash it and everything else sometimes. And all they do is grow marijuana. It's, in our area, is a very good area for growing, but most of the grow houses, of course, are done under, you know, lamps and lights and, you know, not outdoors. In your rural areas of Florida, you might have a lot of outdoor growing. You know, it's just a house that's used to grow pot.
I've always wondered about how they control the aroma, because whenever I've been around pot, you know, I've noticed that it smells very, it has a very strong odor. So I don't know how they could hide that if they grew it in, pump, you know, backyards.
Well, backyards would be hard to take away the smell. But again, in the grow houses, what they have is they have filters, they have charcoal filters that absorb or whatever, it can, you know, freshen the air. So again, the air that leaves the house is cleaned, and so you don't smell it.
Okay, and how is it going to be policed? Kim, why don't you answer that question?
Goes back to the mandatory card registration system. When there is a record of all the patients that can legitimately have marijuana, the police can look at that. But if they were out and about with their card registration system, they could show the officer, I am a patient. That would solve many, many, many of the problems and the overcrowding of the jails that we have these days.
Irving, I'd like to hear from you again. The local economy of Florida. So you tell us how this would affect us. I mean, will it be a positive?
It would be a huge positive for local economies, because, like I say, you would free up your police department to really go after real crime. They wouldn't. The police really don't want to be bothered with possession of marijuana and arrest. And it takes their time and effort. So it would free them up for real crime. You would have you'd be putting people to work, because you would have the dispensaries that would be dispensing it. You have the people that would be growing it, so therefore they would be having jobs. You have the people that would be cleaning it. You'd have the laboratories that would be testing it. So you'd have so many an economy that people would be put to work in. And again, like you say, we have very, very good growing weather here. What's stopping us from exporting? Okay, let's say a state, you know, that doesn't have as good a growing season or something, and maybe doesn't and isn't able to grow enough, that once we really research which strains work best for different diseases, we may come up with a strain for a disease that's better than the other states. We could export it to that patient. Keep in mind, there are 64 different cannabinoids in this plant, and we don't know in what combination they all work for different diseases. I mean, right now, think about it. The federal government's given me a strain for muscle relaxant, anti-inflammatory for pain. They're given the same strain for a person for glaucoma. Is the same strain what works best for both of us? Probably not. But the government won't agree that it works, so therefore they won't do any testing. So what we really want all the states, and all the states are talking about this, what we want the states to do is do their own testing. If the federal government's not going to do it, we're going to do it. Okay, so we're going to try to get the dispensaries to keep records, to be able to talk to the patients. When a patient comes in to buy a certain herb, why is that herb helping you? Why is this one better? You know, what's your condition? And start putting all this together so we can have our own database. I smoke 10 to 12 marijuana cigarettes a day, and I don't get high. I never have. I mean, so I don't use it for the euphoria. I use it for the medical aspect, because... So for the local economy, to get back to your question, it would be a godsend for it.
And Kim, you have two toddlers. What kind of message are we giving local kids by legalizing cannabis?
Our children, yes, out of this whole movement, our children are going to learn about compassion. When people are suffering, we as human beings should come to their rescue. When laws are unjust, we should fight to change them. You know, the message that children are going to get is that marijuana is not dangerous. Right now, the message that they're getting is that marijuana is as dangerous as heroin. And when our teenagers are finding out that marijuana is not dangerous, they're also going to assume that heroin is not dangerous. And we don't want that assumption at all. I want our kids to understand that all drugs have to be used respectfully and legitimately, and they all can be regulated properly.
Irvin, how does religion play a role in this, established religions, if any, if they play a role at all?
Well, I feel like, again, it's the compassion issue. The reform movement of Judaism 5 years ago passed for medical marijuana, using different sayings in the Bible about different plants put on this earth to help people. The religious aspect, I think, is any religion is trying to help people from suffering. But again, it's all in education, and that really has not been done either with you know, different religious sects. And then, of course, you've got the Rastafarians and that believe in the herb as a sacrament. I understand that, because to me...
Tim, what's your position on the courts? What do the courts feel about this? What's their participation or lack thereof?
Well, yes, as Irvin did mention, in the state of Florida, on more than one occasion, Florida has upheld with a medical necessity defense. Patients who have been arrested have gotten off or set free because the Florida Supreme Court determined the marijuana to be medicine. The federal laws do need to change as well. There are many organizations working on the laws on a federal level. Every year there is a federal bill that is introduced. And every year it gains more and more support, but even if the federal laws did change, the state of Florida would still have to go through this process to change their laws.
Let me add to that. Also, on the federal level, we've had a lawsuit that's going on approximately 35 years now for reclassification of medical cannabis as Schedule 2 or 3 or 4, Schedule 1 being it has no medical benefit. Schedule 2, like cocaine, morphine, it has medical benefit but can be potentially harmful. And so these have gone through the courts through DEA. Again, there were hearings in 86 to 88 through DEA. Their own law review judge said that it should be made a medicine, and DEA did not go along with that. So while the courts have not been on our side, we've tried to use the courts as much as possible, and we still hope this reclassification that we're hoping for through the federal government may come in the next couple of years. And if it does get reclassified as a medicine, then a doctor would be allowed to prescribe it.
And my next question has to do with, yes, basically federal laws. In Florida, what do you think the chances are that legislators are going to pass a bill once we get all, you know, once you've collected all your signatures and you go forward with it? What's the chance?
I think the chances are very good that the politicians are going to do something. They don't want to see a constitutional amendment on medical marijuana. When they introduce and pass a bill, they can have complete control